All right, good afternoon. It's afternoon, right? Yeah. I call the Conference Committee on House File 4188 to order on Saturday, May 16th, 2026. A quorum is present. The plan for today is that we will have some motions and amendments to finalize our Conference Committee report, and this is intended to be the last meeting of this Conference Committee. So there are a few amendments in our packets. And the first motion is Chair O'Driscoll, if you have the A30 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will defer shortly to staff to talk about it. This is an amendment that deals with our 62J language from previous meetings of the Conference Committee. And what it does is it inserts some additional language in here that directs the Department of Commerce and the Department of Health and Human Services to work together to bring to the legislature. And I will talk about the three major components here. Number one, consider the fiscal impact on the state, impact on families and health plans as it relates to home care nursing services, and prioritize affordability health care coverage for complex medical needs of recipients for home care nursing services, and include some potential legislation for the legislature in 2027 to consider. And the reason that that is so important is we were made aware of the underlying issues about what was happening here and what was not happening here very, very late in this session. After repeated attempts to visit with the department and try to figure it out, we were actually very recently, within this week, as a matter of fact, able to figure out what the issues were. And the last thing that we want to do is to make a fix this year that has going to cause more emotional issues and angst and problems for people going forward on this topic. So we're looking to push the pause button for right now, direct the agencies to review this, including the 62J mandate review, so that we can get our arms around this, because I know in speaking to my other co-chairs of this committee, we don't feel that we have all the information that's necessary, and it's difficult for us to track, particularly in the last 50 hours of a legislative session. And so again, I offer the A30 amendment as not the perfect solution, but as a commitment from the three chairs and hopefully the Conference Committee at large to support this important issue and to get to a solution that works and so folks can go about their lives. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. And before we take the vote on this amendment, I think it's really important that we pause and think about the ramifications of what's happening here. And so I would like to invite Senator Bolden to come up and testify, as well as some other folks. I have questions as well for the commissioner and for some of the health plans. So Senator Bolden, if you wanted to kind of kick it off on why this is so important and what dominoes may fall because of this.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. I'm grateful to be here to be able to talk about this, and grateful that this issue has been part of your discussions. I'm extremely disappointed that the Senate position wasn't able to come through into the Conference Committee report. I agree and think it is important to center the families who are going to be affected by this. And so, you know, as we talk about putting a pause, that pause impacts families. And so, you know, as a refresher, we're talking about 200 to 250 families across the state. These are, you know, largely kids with very complex medical needs who are, you know, have both commercial health insurance and medical assistance. They require hospital level care in their homes. And that care, you know, since 2010, since this body enacted a mandate for those private plans to cover that care, that has happened for the last 16 years without issue until last fall, when families were surprised by letters from two insurance companies that that care that they rely on to keep their children alive and in their homes was going to be capped arbitrarily. And so it is, you know, with that being allowed to continue, it puts those kids at risk. And while they do have medical assistance, those costs are now going to get shifted onto the state in ways that aren't contemplated in our budget. That's going to have real ramifications for our state budget. And so, you know, that might sound all well and good for the families, and if it gets covered, it gets covered, but that creates other issues. When those costs get shifted to their waiver, you know, this is expensive care, no doubt. So a lot of their, you know, the money in their waiver budgets are going to go to cover this care. They're going to have to make choices about what other services, equipment, you know, pieces of care that they are not going to have, because now that their budgets, you know, are covering this care. And so I'm thinking about those families and what this means for them. And, you know, we'll keep working to be sure that they have the care that they need.
Thank you, Senator Bolden. And I also just wanted to share, I just spoke with Children's Hospital, and you might have seen the story on WCCO news about this, and the doctors at Children's Hospital are very fearful for their patients' lives. When I spoke with Amanda Jensen over at Children's, she, and I'm going to pull up her email because I just want to make sure I'm saying things correctly on the record. These are children with complex medical needs, ventilators, tracheotomies, and severe conditions who depend on skilled nursing care at home as an alternative to staying in the hospital. We are very concerned about this not getting fixed this session for a few key reasons. Kids and their families should be at home whenever possible, not in the hospital, and home care nursing is the only thing that allowing that. Without this care, more kids will require hospital-level care, which then limits the availability of critical care beds for the rest of the community. This would be a concern of all of ours for ours all year round, and would be especially problematic during respiratory surge season, where there are often close to capacity. And the cost to families that providing this care at home is far more cost-effective than providing it at the hospital. I believe the conference committee heard testimony to this effect last week. Families are facing medical bills for ICU hospital stays is completely unavoidable, and this care is covered at home like it had been. Dr. Michael Shreves works with the sickest kids in the area and has been tracking the insurance changes. Quote, and then you have other patients with traumas or infections, and there's no space for them. In some ways, to me, we are setting the clock back 40 years. These kids, they have friends, they go to Target, they won't be able to do those things. They will be in the hospital. Worst case scenario, that the kids will die at home. I also spoke to many of these families, and what would be the purpose of them buying private insurance now that these home care nursing services are not covered? They are not going to buy private insurance come next year. What does that mean for the state? That means that they will switch to traditional Medicaid waivers. We heard from Health Partners that it costs $187 million, something along those lines a year, I think, or biennium, I'm not quite sure. But good luck to you guys who are here next year, because you're the ones that are going to have to be dealing with this human services budget. $187 million increase to our human services budget. So it's just not, it's about the families, but it's also about making prudent choices for our state moving forward. This is shameful that this is not getting fixed. It's shameful that we have to bring legislation forward to do this. And it's shameful that we don't have the votes to put it forward. I have some questions for the commissioner as well, so if she could please come. Is she not here? She just left. Okay. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Smith. If you'd like to state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sam Smith. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Department of Commerce. Commissioner Arnold is present at this meeting, but yeah, had to
saw her walk out, so
step out for what I'm sure is an urgent question.
At this time of the year, there are. Well, if I'm going to ask you some of these are questions that the families sent to me. Brandon Walters in particular has been one of the big advocates on this, and from the start they have felt that they have not, their voices have not been heard, and that they have not been able to get the answers to their questions they need. And so he sent me a list of questions, and I am just going to read these right off of his email. And so maybe I'll give a minute here. Commissioner, are you able to come up, or do you have to leave?
Yeah.
Okay. Nope, you're good. You're fine. First of all, I want to thank you both for your hard work on this. It's been a really tough situation. It's been really hard for all of us all around. And I know that you guys are working as hard as you can to resolve this. And so I'm just here to ask the questions for the families. So first question is, what is the difference between home care nursing and home health services? Commissioner?
Representative Cagle and committee members, for the record, I'm Grace Arnold. I'm the commissioner of the Department of Commerce. So from a plan contract language, there is in our contracts a kind of banner of home care services that has a number of things listed out, including private duty nursing, you know, other kinds of things that you would have at home. I can send a list around. From a clinical standpoint, I think a lot of things we've heard that there are a lot of different ways that these get referred to. But in general, within the plan documents, there is a kind of bucket of home care services that is one section of a plan document relating to coverage that is a bunch of different kinds of coverage.
So the second question that they sent is, are you aware now that these are different services separately defined in statute?
Chair Cagle, there is, and members, there is a mandate that is in statute, or a requirement in statute that is, yes, I am aware of that, and it's addressed in the plan documents.
Were you aware that these are completely different services when you made your decision to allow coverage gaps?
Chair Cagle and members, the home care services kind of overarching bucket covers a number of things. It can cover, you know, in the bucket, it includes like home hospice. So there's this whole big section of home care services that covers a number of things. And that is sort of the way that we look at the coverage.
Thank you. Were you aware that home care nursing services are billed in 15-minute units, not hourly visits?
Chair Cagle and members, we at the department don't get into the details of the way that providers bill to carriers. And so, you know, that's sort of beyond our purview.
Thank you. Are you aware that there is nowhere in statute or rule or in the Minnesota Essential Health Benefit set for 120 visit limit on home care nursing, only home health visits?
Chair Cagle and members, the Essential Health Benefits benchmark has home care services as a section. The limits on that section are 120 hours.
Thank you. So the set of essential benefits that every state must have is set by the federal government. Is it true that the health plans must cover additional state mandates that go above and beyond the essential health benefit set?
Chair Cagle and members, state mandates can be put into place, and the state covers the additional cost beyond the essential health benefits.
Thank you. So even if home care nursing were the same as home health services, if we had a state mandate that exceeds what the minimums are in the essential benefit requirement, do the health plans have to cover those mandated services at the levels that exceed the limits in the essential benefit requirements?
Chair Cagle and members, I am not. So the plan contract with the insured is up to the limit. To the extent that there are mandates, just generally speaking, and that are beyond the essential health benefits, then the state picks up the cost.
Thank you. Are you aware that private duty nursing is what home care nursing had been called before 2014, and that private duty nursing language is the language of the original 2010 mandate?
Ms. Chair Cagle and members, private duty nursing coverage is listed under the home care services section in the essential health benefits.
Members, the were you aware that when the legislature discussed this provision in 2010, the intent was for Medicaid not to pay for it?
Chair Cagle and members, I am aware of, we've reviewed the legislative history. I think it's probably important to remember that in 2011, many of the consumer protections that are in the Affordable Care Act were not yet enacted. So the market looked really different in 2011 than it does now, and it's evolved since then, both on the provider and the payer side.
Were you aware that the committee transcript says that verbatim?
Chair Cagle and members, we've reviewed the legislative history.
Thank you. Are you aware that waiver budgets are set 12 to 15 months in advance and that some of those waivers have set dollar amounts?
Chair Cagle and members, I don't know all of the details of the way the waiver services work, but do know that it's a set budget and that it is set in advance. And I think just like from a human perspective, like families need time to plan, and I certainly appreciate that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Were you aware that not enforcing the 62Q mandate would force nursing coverage costs onto these limited waiver budgets and use them all up?
Chair Cagle and members, I think for every family it's different because it depends on how much services they need to the extent that they exceed the 120-day cap and the plan enforces that limit, then the coverage would go onto a waivered service, whatever waivered service budget is available.
Thank you. When you issued a correction notice for Health Partners after they rescinded services to the families they had given prior authorization letters to, telling them that they had nursing covering for all of 26, and then rescinded those nursing hours after open enrollment closed. How many families did that affect?
Chair Cagle and members, I believe it was in the teens, and I would have to get back to you on exactly how many it was.
Thank you, Commissioner. Did you send any notices to families who had Health Partners plans in 2026 who did not have prior authorization letters in 25, telling them they'd be receiving a letter that has their coverage reinstated for 26? Did any of the wrong families be notified that they would get their coverage reinstated?
Chair Cagle and members, I think it's probably worth a bit of a side conversation. So the way that the department does many of the actions that we take is through enforcement mechanisms, which require complaints and are very specific to the facts of the case for the person and the entity involved. We do a lot of these across all of the different regulated entities that we have. So any enforcement actions we take are specific to the circumstances of that of those families. In the case that you're referencing, there was a specific group that had a specific set of circumstances, and then the consent order with Health Partners is for that group that had a specific set of circumstances.
Thank you. And then last question from me. The Council of Health Plans submitted a letter on Tuesday that showed a Health Partners Essential Health Benefit Benchmark Plan for 25 through 27. It lists private duty nursing as completely different services than home health care services. So just wanted to make that point. Is there any other questions from the committee to the commissioner? Chair O'Driscoll?
Madam Chair, I'll certainly speak before we vote on the amendment to kind of wrap up the amendment. I just wondering if Senator Klein had anything he wanted to share on that. Okay.
Thank you. All right. Is there any members of the public wishing to testify on this issue? Okay. Seeing none, any discussion to the amendment? All right, Chair O'Driscoll moves the A30 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, next up, I really want to, Brandon, the Walters family, all the kids that have been around here, Kit and Chase, and all the letters that we received from folks just in the past few days. I'm truly sorry that we couldn't get this across the finish line. I'm willing to entertain a motion if anybody wants to put one forward on the provision. All right. Chair Klein, I understand you have a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt Senate language Article 9, Section 35.
Staff would, this is the paddle wheel provision. So again, disappointed that we weren't able to, did you wanna speak to it, Steph? Okay. Senator Frenz, did you wanna speak to this?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, thanks. Again, disappointed that we weren't able to get the sweepstakes language in. But any discussion to the paddle, the Article 9, Section 35?
Madam Chair.
Senator Klein.
I have an amendment to the motion. I don't know if we adopt the motion and then adopt the amendment. However, whatever is parliamentary.
Staff or nonpartisan staff, any suggestions?
Chair and members, either way is fine.
So members, this is the meat raffle provision. We passed it as a standalone this morning on the Senate floor. It is hopeful that it will also pass off the House and become a law by standalone, but we want to cover our bases here and pass it in this omnibus as well.
The amendment to the motion, did you want to speak to that?
Sure. Madam Chair, the A30, I'll go ahead and offer the A30. Oh, sorry, the A24 to the motion, and this simply adds the game of Haas and Pfeffer to the provision.
Any discussion to the A24 amendment to the motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those in opposed? Motion prevails. All right, to the motion as amended. So Chair Klein moves Article 9, Section 35 as amended. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. All right, Len, that members, that is all the motions that I am aware of for the day. Is there any final discussion before we finalize our conference committee report? Chair Klein, any members? Chair Klein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Chair O'Driscoll and the entire staff for a process that I think has been exemplary. It is true that we ended on a very disappointing note, not being able to help the families of disabled kids in Minnesota, and that is a deep regret. It was the Senate position, and it will remain work that needs to be done by this committee next year when the three of us are gone. And like yourself, I express my regrets right now to the families for our failure to produce results on that. This has been a good committee. The three chairs on Commerce have worked together very professionally and in a way that I think each of us individually has expressed over time has been exemplary for how legislation should happen here in the state of Minnesota. We've respected each other's sort of priorities and boundaries and, you know, across party lines, passed a lot of good things. There's a number of provisions that were in this bill that sort of got passed on their own as standalones, which also I think is a good model for future legislatures, that we, instead of bundling them as an omnibus, got them across the line independently. We did protections for kids on social media as a standalone. We banned crypto kiosks as a standalone. We created a trusted contact program for bank fraud for seniors. All good things. Right here in the bill that you're about to pass, we have protections against AI usage to deny claims in utilization review for patients in Minnesota. So that is good work. The things we didn't do, you know, that are on my wish list that I regret, obviously what we've spoken about today, as well as a ban on dogs and cats pet shops, did not make it across the line. Some provisions to protect 340B laws and keep affordable medications flowing to the hospitals of Minnesota. That's also not in the bill, and again, a regret of mine. But good work for the future legislative chores, and thank you so much to my co-chairs and to all the staff for working together on this bill this year.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would also like to underscore what Senator Klein said. It has been a privilege and a pleasure to work with everybody around this table and on our respective committees, and I think you hit it on the head, Senator, when you said we acted in a professional manner. If only the people of Minnesota could have tracked what we've done over this year to find out that their government can be functional and that two different ideologies can come to the table and produce good things for the state of Minnesota. And I think that that has happened in this unique and crazy situation called 6767. I had to do it one more time. In the environment that we are in, and it's politically charged from the top of the ticket all the way down to, I don't know where soil and water districts are, but I'm sure there's some things that are controversial there. And so we agreed that we were going to be transparent, that we were going to be honest, and that we were going to put on the table, if one side or the other could not bring votes, that we weren't going to play cat and mouse with each other, that we were going to focus on the things that we could do. And we did bring a lot of things across the line. And as Senator Klein said, there were some things that didn't make it in. And one thing that I'm disappointed that didn't make it in,
reinsurance.
And I think that that's important because we're talking about cost shifting and drivers that are happening in our previous conversation on here. It's been estimated that that could cause 2.5 to 5% increase in everyone's premiums. Well, we know without reinsurance, that's 30 to 40% increase in premiums for people as well. And so my hope is that next year, early on in the session, that the legislature passes the 1332 waiver, and the commissioner has even concurred with us that the sooner that this happens, the better equipped they will be to move forward with the application for the waiver and deal with any stumbling blocks so that folks won't have a gap in their insurance. And as I look across the dais here at Senators Friends and Seeberger, who I serve with on the Pension Commission, we've had trouble with other areas that affect families, and it's called duty disability. And last year, when I was pounding the table, and Senator Friends knows this because we had a very, very boisterous conversation. As a matter of fact, closed caption, to you, Senator, I told someone this morning, I've only had two of those kinds of conversations, and you are the beneficiary of one of those conversations in my 16 years here in the legislature. And we found out that that wasn't right. And I think it's doing stuff on the fly at the end that gets a problem. And so we've put together a work group to deal with this issue because there are families whose lives are being affected every time we move their insurance markers or change the definitions of different kinds of things. We need to take care of people. And that's why I'm very sensitive to doing the right thing one time, instead of having people go through emotional roller coasters every time the legislature gets together. Senator Seeberger knows this as well because she's had some things that have gone to work groups that she wanted to have from different kinds of things in the Pension Commission. And we've been very fortunate that taking the time to catch our breath and do things has yielded some very good things. And I realize this isn't pensions, but we've created a new pension plan because we took the time to do it right. We're going to do duty disability right, and it is my hope that we are also going to be able to handle these critical care issues that we're discussing in the same fashion. So we do it once, and do it right so families can go about being families and doing what families do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also just want to express my gratitude for all of you guys, all the staff, all this has been a wonderful committee, and we did get some good work accomplished. I am heartbroken. I think I've cried all my tears out. Yes, we are people. We do have emotions for these families because I see my niece and every one of these kids. So, again, I just want to express that I'm sorry to these families. But this has been a very productive committee. And I hope that we have set an example for people going forward. This place has gotten very divisive, has gotten very disrespectful to the institution. And I fear that when we leave, it will only continue to become more divisive and hateful. And we can't have that. We just can't. And so, but anyway, going back to commerce, 1332 is actually, the 1332 waiver is called a state innovation waiver. And so for me, I just kind of find it a little bit ironic that we're doing a state innovation waiver, but doing the same thing over and over again. And yet it's still, the premiums are still going up. People are still not getting the care they need. And I think actually private insurance is doing a pretty good job of putting themselves out of business. So I don't think we'll have to wait too long until the entire thing collapses and the state will have to step in to care for the people, which I believe is our job. Our job as government is to provide services that the private sector cannot. Health plans are doing a good job right now of proving that the private sector cannot provide health care to people. They're very good at doing administrative work, very good at using technology and you know, making sure that they make their money by denying people care. And I always make the joke that once the nuns got out of the business, that's when healthcare went to hell. Literally. and so it became about money and not about actually caring for sick people. And so I would encourage the next group of folks that come along is to look at that 1332 state innovation waiver and actually maybe think of some innovative solutions that I don't maybe have been around in other countries, but we cannot continue to decide who lives and who dies because of what kind of healthcare coverage they have, because of how much money they have, or if their family has good jobs, or they work for the state. So I would really just like next year's group coming in to think about that. Think about how we actually care for people. And again, thank you. I'm grateful for every one of you here, everybody in the audience that has been advocating, the families, the staff. I love hearing kids' voices in the audience too. So anyway, all right, members, it has been a privilege to work with you for this year to finalize the report. I move to direct nonpartisan staff to prepare a conference committee report and also move that nonpartisan staff are empowered to make technical and conforming changes to the language approved by this conference committee in order to reflect the intent of this conference committee. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion is approved. Members, that is the final hearing of this conference committee on House File 4188. Seeing no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.